July 4th is, of course, the anniversary of the independence of the United States. It's also the anniversary of the day when one of the, I think, most human speeches was ever made. It was July 4th, 1939, when Lou Gehrig let the world have access to his heart, his mind, regarding all that he was dealing with. My next guest with his new book takes you to those last years of Lou Gehrig's baseball career and life. It was a time when he broke out of the shadows of others, achieved his much-due position, expanded his activities, and really faced the ultimate tragedy. The book is The Last Ride of the Iron Horse, How Lou Gehrig Fought ALS to Play One Final Championship Season, authored by Voice of America veteran Dan Joseph. Thanks for being here today, Dan.
Thank you for having me.
And this it fills in so many blanks. If all your exposure to the Lou Gehrig story was the film with Gary Cooper, which was a valiant effort, and I'm not going to take away from it, but unfortunately, most movie biographies really don't hit the key part of someone's life, strangely enough. The with a book like this, because we kind of lose track of Gehrig, at least as the public, after that July 4th speech, how much material did you have to work with? What was your research like?
The research, I was digging through a lot of old newspapers and magazines, radio broadcasts, film. There's a lot of stuff beyond, you know, I think most people are familiar with the film of his actual speech, or at least the parts of it that exist on film. But there's tons of information left over in, like, old issues of the New York Daily News, the Post, and the Times, and some New York papers in the sky, so to speak, you know, like the New York Sun and the World Telegram and the Herald Tribune. Lots of quotes and interviews and stories that have never appeared in the biographies before. And so I was digging out all that information and then going to old radio broadcasts, which are just surfacing on YouTube or maybe are available at the Library of Congress. A lot of old film that's on various websites these days. And I just wanted to kind of piece together what Lou Gehrig was going through in 1938, when he was beginning to suffer from ALS, even though he didn't know, you know, what the disease was. He knew something was wrong. And what I've done is find a lot of quotes from him or from the people around him noting that something seemed to be off. And the point of the book was to do it blow by blow throughout the season.
The and it's more about Gehrig the human, not just the baseball player. Again, that's quite a switch from the books we've gotten in the past. Some even theorized that one Western film that Gehrig made, there were some doctors who turned to that film to see if there were any early signs of ALS starting to be evident at that point in his life.
Yes, there have been a couple doctors who said they saw signs of muscle deterioration or signs that he didn't have normal leg strength. I watched the film and I looked at other studies about it, and I concluded that probably he was okay at that time. It was probably a bit later that he was starting to really feel the effects, and that's one of the things that I cover in the book.
And we should say, too, at this point in time in history, the ALS Foundation, the Muscular Dystrophy Association, which are the two leading organizations that are funding research in ALS, they were decades away from existence. So it was either specialist doctors at, you know, a couple of points in the country, or the Mayo Clinic, and that was really the full knowledge of what ALS was all about. Other than in Gary's case, a dramatically short period of time between the time it was diagnosed and the time that the end came, there wasn't much more known than really what we have known today, quite frankly.
Yeah, that's why it became known as Lou Gehrig's disease, because it was so unfamiliar to the public at the time. And the doctors who diagnosed him at the Mayo Clinic, they had a hard time explaining it, or they did a poor job, at least, of explaining it. Some people thought Gehrig had contracted polio or something like that. And there was a newspaper reporter who reported that and said Gehrig had given polio to some of his teammates, and it led to a libel lawsuit. But no, Gehrig had ALS, and it's still widely known as Lou Gehrig's disease, and it's probably the first time that a disease became closely associated with a celebrity.
Just refresh the younger person who might be listening right now. how stellar were Garrick's stats when he was at his best? Let's say 1925, 1927, for example.
In his prime, Garrick was second only to Babe Ruth in terms of being a power hitter. He, in his best years, averaged 35 to 45 homers a season. He had a batting average of 350. He routinely drove in 150 runs a season. And I think, and I've heard this discussion come up at times, you know, people say that players back then wouldn't do nearly as well today. I think in Garrick's case, he would. He had the size of the current players, and he had a smooth, level swing. It wasn't a wild uppercut the way that Babe Ruth sometimes had. I think he would be able to adjust. If you gave him a batting helmet and a modern lightweight bat and let him study some videos for a month, I think he would do just fine. He was a power hitter for all times.
And certainly you have to assume, too, with the speed of his bat, again, before ALS took its toll, and the faster speed of a pitch, those could have had the potential to be some really long home runs.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. If you put him in the modern game with a modern bat, I mean, he would. Well, even back then, there were numerous players, Hall of Fame players, who said he hit vicious line drives. You know, one guy, Charlie Gehringer, Hall of Fame second baseman for Detroit, he said, "You took your life in your hands when you tried to catch one of Garrick's line drives." They didn't use the term exit velocity back then, but Garrick's hits had big exit velocity.
So as far as his game is concerned, we're talking with Dan Joseph, author of Last Ride of the Iron Horse, How Lou Gehrig Fought ALS to Play One Final Championship Season. What were the first signs that something wasn't right, and how did Gehrig react to that?
Well, I don't want to give away too much book, but he noticed in spring training of 1938 that just something seemed to be off. He didn't feel quite right, and he didn't feel he was as powerful as he had been. And he fell into a very deep slump at the start of the season. And then he struggled on and off through about the first 3.5 months of the season. And the fans were booing him for the first time in his career. And a lot of sports writers were saying that, you know, his consecutive game streak had passed the 2,000 mark by this point. And some sports writers were saying, it's time to end the streak. Time for you to take a rest. And they, of course, they didn't know he had ALS. They thought, he's 35 years old. You know, he never takes a break. He literally, that season, at various times, he was playing with a broken thumb. He had had a really bad attack of what they called lumbago, lower back pain. And people told him it was time to sit down.
And that wasn't unlike what Cal Ripken went through, too, when he was on the going to break the streak.
Yes, yeah.
There were several times when Baltimore had that horrible 0-1, I think, 15 start, and it was the cover, Time to Sit Down, on Sports Illustrated.
I remember Ripken at one point, he was hitting like 230 mid-season, and everyone was clamoring him for it to end it, sit down. But he persevered, as Gehrig did.
And you can read about, too, again, it's an amazing story. I mean, scientifically, it's said, and certainly, you know, people always theorize, too, does an athlete's body withstand and can it recover faster to, you know, in a certain period of time versus an illness? Versus the normal individual, is that what happened? What happened to Lou Gehrig? Possibly, maybe. You can read some more details in Dan's book. When you tell a story like this about Lou Gehrig, as you did in Last Ride of the Iron Horse, at some point did you start to feel that you were also telling the story of ALS and what it does to somebody?
Yes, yes. There have been other athletes that came down with ALS in the prime of their careers, and there's this kind of common thread that, you know, it's a progressive disease, and it comes on slowly. It's just like little imperceptible signs at first, and then you start to feel twitches in your arms, and you get fatigued more easily. And Gehrig's case was similar to a lot of ALS patients, just the gradual deterioration in his strength and his speed and his reflexes, and finding it harder and harder to move. What's extraordinary is that late in that 1938 season, August, he experienced what may have been what they call a temporary ALS reversal. There have been researchers studying this, he got a reprieve in a sense, and briefly found his old batting stroke. That doesn't happen all that often with ALS patients.
No, it's usually a one-way street. Once the decline starts, there's no hill and valley, unfortunately.
Right. And the question, and I talk about this in the book, was he making adjustments? Was there something going on inside his body that allowed him to regain his power for a while? It's a very interesting question.
And you indeed will learn more about that in Last Ride of the Iron Horse, Dan Joseph's new book. One last question, because we keep mentioning the streak. Does the streak actually prove to be a negative and take people's eyes off of the other achievements that made Gehrig great? Because he was not just about the streak.
Well, yeah, I think to some extent it does. And the July 4th speeches, as memorable as that was, that also tends to overshadow his career. He spent much of his career in the shadow of Babe Ruth, and then to a lesser extent in the shadow of Joe DiMaggio. But he was incredible. Just the consistency and the tremendous batting stats he piled up. Really, the only comparison you can think of in baseball history is Albert Pujols. And of course, Gehrig never had a decline phase to his career like Pujols has had in the last, 5 or 6 years. He really wasn't showing any signs of slowing down. He could have wound up playing 2,500 games in a row. His manager said many years later, there's no reason to think he wouldn't have been hitting home runs when he was 45. He wasn't getting fat. He wasn't getting slow. It took this disease, ALS, to stop him in his tracks. He wasn't slowing down otherwise.
As you'll learn with Last Ride of the Iron Horse, how Lou Gehrig fought ALS to play one final championship season. It is a stellar career with a lot of what-ifs attached to it, and Dan does it the respect and the justice and the revelations that it deserves. A lot of things you never knew about Lou Gehrig, especially after his playing career in that short time he had. He was not dormant by any stretch of imagination, and that was just, again, testament to the individual that he was. Last Ride of the Iron Horse, how Lou Gehrig fought ALS to play one final championship season. Dan Joseph, thanks for the story that you brought to us, the baseball history you also shared with us, and thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me. It's a wonderful book, and I appreciate you having me on, and I hope people like it.